Hello, I'm Tom Courtney Clack, and in 1983, I had an old Land Rover up here in Jefferson, New York, upstate New York, and I fixed it up and drove through Central America, around South America, shipped the car from Rio to Durban in South Africa, and drove around Africa.
We travel for business. We travel for pleasure. We travel to expand our minds. Whether it's one state over or halfway around the globe. If the world's a book, why only read one page? I'm Elizabeth Hill, and you're listening to a WAMC Northeast Public Radio production. This is Postcards from the Road.
I remember the excitement of getting to a road where I could accelerate to 30 miles an hour. Of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is the hippo. More people are killed by hippos than anything else.
Hey there, and welcome to WAMC Northeast Public Radio's first episode of Postcards from the Road. My name is Elizabeth Hill. I am your host and producer of the brand new podcast series. I'm thrilled to introduce our very first guest, Thomas Courtney Clack. Tom is a former sound engineer based out of Manhattan and has worked with BBC, MTV, and Nickelodeon, and considered to have one of the biggest sound libraries in the country. He was more than thrilled to meet up with me in April to discuss his trip from Costa Rica to Panama, down to Rio, over to South Africa, and finally winding up in Rwanda. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the stories and the sounds. This is episode one, A Sound Journey.
Why was it the right time?
It just happened that my best friend's Dutch wife and I had suddenly decided after 10 years of just being great friends that it had become more than that. And things got very difficult. It turned into a soap opera, and it was very good for me to get out of town. So I took off in my Land Rover January 1st, 1983, and I was scared to death because, you know, here I am, I'm finally doing what I dreamed of doing, but suddenly realizing now I've actually got to do it. And how is it going to be out there all by myself for a year? Everywhere I went, people were really nice. And I had nothing to be afraid of. I made friends wherever I went. One of the most extraordinary experiences was in Costa Rica. And I heard a rumor that there was a dolphin that would come in and play with the children in this tiny fishing village called Costa Pajaros. And first thing I see is there's a village outhouse where the whole village used this one outhouse. And there was a sign above it saying, "The dolphin is friendly, don't molest him." And so I ask a little boy, "Where's the dolphin?" And he said, "Oh, we'll call him in." And it turned out to be a zoo because there were about 15 children and teenagers who all waded into the sea and wanted to show me the dolphin. And here he came, and people climbed on his back, and he was so calm and sweet. And but it was a zoo, so I didn't really get a chance. I took some pictures, but I didn't get a chance to actually meet the dolphin. However, I camped on the beach, and in the morning I got up very early and I was taking these photographs of the fishing boats with the moon, full moon above them. And this little girl comes along and she says, "There's the dolphin." And I look and I could see this. She points out this little bump in front of one of the fishing boats. And I thought, well, I've got him all to myself. There's nobody else around. And I swam out and there he was sitting in front of this boat. And I was patting his back and he's totally calm. And then I found he's got his tail wrapped around the anchor rope of the fishing boat. So he couldn't go, he couldn't move. So I got him unwrapped. It took a while. I got him unwrapped, and then he did this huge jump out of the sea of joy and was off. So then in the afternoon, these two little boys came up to me and they said, "Do you want to come and play with the dolphin?" I, yeah. And so we all wade in the sea. They slap on the water. And this fin comes speeding along towards us. I hope that's a dolphin. And it was. And he came right up. He took each... he rubbed up against my leg, sort of like a dog almost. He obviously recognized who I was. And then he took each of the little boys on a ride on his back. And then he took my arm very, very gently in his teeth and drew me to come with him out into further out into the sea, where the sea was less murky, and he wanted to play with me in the clear water. And anyway, that was like, this is the kind of experience you dream of, to meet a dolphin. And I did, and he was the sweetest, nicest dolphin you could ever meet. Eventually, I came to Panama. And the road ends there. There is no road from Panama to South America. It's the Darien Gap, it's known as, and it's a jungle so impossibly impenetrable. There's no road. So you can either take a ship to South America, or in my case, there wasn't a ship handy, but there was a plane. So they said you can go by plane to Curaçao, little Dutch island in the Caribbean. And so we maneuvered the Land Rover onto this airplane. It was an old DC-10. It had it was set up for cargo. It had these sort of ball bearings in the floor, so you could roll. Like, we could roll the Land Rover in on and twist it around on these ball bearings, and we just were able to get it in. We flew to Curaçao, and then he couldn't get it out. And we had a terrible time. They thought they might have to take the Land Rover apart. But we did do it. And then took the ferry from Curaçao to Venezuela. And then on. Definitely the Land Rover was the car to have in all these third world countries. Because everywhere I went in South America, Central America, Africa, there were people who knew how to fix Land Rovers. And of course, the Land Rover could handle anything. And I remember the excitement getting to a road in South America where I could accelerate to 30 miles an hour. The roads were just unspeakable. I had a fascinating experience on my way out of Bolivia. Bolivia has lost its coastline. It lost its coastline to Peru in a war. And so it's has no coastline, but it still has a navy, and they're very proud of it. And there's a naval academy, and all they do now is they drive little motor launches around Lake Titicaca. But anyway, I was headed for Paraguay, and I'm driving through the Chaco Desert, which is just a plain, scrubby desert, and a long, straight road. And on the side of the road is a cabin with a veranda, and sitting on the veranda was a naval officer in full uniform, and a sailor comes running out into the road with a rifle, and he stops me and he says, "The captain says you are driving at a very disrespectful speed, and you must turn around and drive back half a kilometer and drive by again at a respectful speed." I got to Rio just before Christmas and New Year's, and Rio met all my dreams. It was I had amazing experiences in Rio, and I really probably shouldn't get into the details of it, but my hotel was right by Copacabana Beach, and that beach, it was pretty exciting at New Year's.
Hey,
enough to say it was everything I dreamed of as a visit to Rio. The car went onto a ship from Rio to Durban in South Africa, and I flew and then sallied forth into Africa. I camped on the banks of the Chobe River, and there are trees growing out of the river so that my camp was about on the same level as the trees' tops. And at night, the baboons would come and climb into the trees to sleep. And if they felt threatened that maybe there was a leopard around, they would make their rahoo. Couldn't get much sleep in a tent with that racket going on. I also managed to get the quintessential lion roar. I managed to get within about 10 feet of a lion when the lions do the male lions do their big roar as the sun goes down. And I happened to be in the right position, only about 10 feet from this big male lion. And this is the sound I recorded of him. Of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is the hippo. More people are killed by hippos than anything else, because when they're in the water, just their two little eyes stick out and the tip of their nose, so you can't see much. And I was camping in a place and there was a hippo pool nearby, and this woman rented a little boy to go with her to show her where the hippo pond was, and she paid him to throw stones at this hippo to see. She wanted to get a picture with the hippo with its mouth open. What she didn't know was the hippo had a calf between its legs underneath the water. They couldn't see, and the hippo got finally so brassed off it charged her, and hippos move as fast as a racehorse. You wouldn't believe it because they're so fat. But he caught her and he just chomped her to pieces. And the poor people who ran the campground had to ship her mashed remains in a parcel back to her family in England. It's very gruesome. And I thought I would cheer you up with that little story. I took a canoe trip down the Zambezi River, and there was a guide, and there was an elderly woman in her 70s in the group, and he decided she should go in his canoe and he could look after her. And he warned everybody about, you know, don't hit a hippo or you're finished. And he was the one who hit the hippo. We were right behind him. And we saw this canoe just rearing up in the air, and this guide and this elderly woman sort of formed an arc through the sky. And amazingly, the hippo didn't pursue and mash them, and we sort of picked them up and got them back in their canoe. And the old lady was just hooting with laughter, saying, "That's the most exciting thing that ever happened to me. That was just wonderful." And we got to Nairobi. And there's a big park in Nairobi. This is in Kenya. And there's probably 200 or 300 people who make things out of metal in this park. They're everywhere. And they make things out of old oil drums and bits of airplanes and bits of cars and stuff. They bash the metal into all sorts of things, from cook stoves to ladles. And it's the most amazing sound. Just 200 or 300 people bashing metal. My dream was to drive all the way back to across the Sahara and end up back in England. But when I got to Rwanda, I called to check in with my studio, and the studio manager said, everything's fine. And he said, Lambert wants to talk to you. Well, Lambert was this wonderful guy who cleaned the studio every day. And he's one of the wisest, greatest people I've ever met. And whenever I was going to hire somebody, I had them talk to Lambert, because if he said they were okay, they were okay. Anyway, Lambert got on the phone and he said, Tom, come on home. That was it. Okay, Lambert. I put a for sale sign in the Land Rover, and a man came up to me. He was a Swiss missionary. He came up to me and he said, well, you don't want to sell your car. And I said, yeah, I do. It has a for sale sign in it. And he said, yeah, but you don't really want to sell it, do you? And I said, well, no, not really. You know, this is my best friend now. And he said, well, I'll look after it till you come back. And I said, well, how do you know I'm going to come back? He said, because I'll have your Land Rover. What do you think? And sure enough, that's what I did. I left the Land Rover with him and then came back to America and got married to the Dutch lady. And we went back to Africa many months later to pick up the Land Rover and deliver it to a family I had met in Zimbabwe, whose teenage son wanted to be a safari guide. And he used my old Land Rover for his safaris until he got so busy that he had to have a fancier car. And he donated my Land Rover to the Save the Rhinos. And they took the top off it and they would go after rhinos and dart them and cut their horns off so that they would not be shot by poachers. And then he got so old that he was retired to a safari camp, and they used him for picnics. And then one day, a plane load of tourists landed at their little landing strip, and it crashed, and the fuselage split in half, and the plane caught fire, and they drove my old Land Rover, whose name was Winnie, up to the burning airplane. They put the winch on a hook on it, and he backed up and he pulled the burning aircraft apart, and all the people in it got out unhurt. And he became very famous. He was a wonderful car. His name Winnie was short for Winne Wine, which is the mountain in Machu Picchu, and it means forever young.
Today's episode features sound effects provided by Tom Clack and Clack Studios. Our theme music is Cherry Blossom Wonders by Kevin MacLeod. And as always, if you like what you hear, subscribe on your audio app of choice. Visit wamcpodcasts.org for more information.